As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
In today's episode of the Sixers Beat, Rich and I talk about the Sixers reportedly hiring Nick Nurse to be their next head coach. Enjoy the podcast. All right, welcome everybody. This is Derek Bodner, joined by Rich Hoffman on the Sixers Beat, part of the Athletics Podcast Network. Here to talk about the all-time three-point percentage leader of the University of Northern Iowa. How you doing, Rich?
Is that true?
It is. Might not be the reason we're going to spend this podcast talking about him, but it is true.
Northern Iowa?
Northern Iowa, yep.
All right, that's D1. The issue with that, I am sure, and I guess we're going to start by roasting Nick Nurse. You know, there are a lot of times when people would say, oh, Steve Kerr is one of the greatest shooters of all time.
Yeah.
And Steve Kerr was an amazing shooter for his era. Yep. He took like a couple threes per game.
And they were generally pretty open. Yeah.
Well, he did play on a pretty good team at the end of his career where the other guys got doubled. You know, it's funny.
Back in those times, like if you took a three off the dribble, like you were sent to the bench. Like, the difficulty of the shots was definitely completely different, yeah.
I'm getting off topic here, but there's something that me and one of my friends just always laugh at. I believe it's in the final episode of The Last Dance. You know, the Bulls are, after shoot-around, I think they're betting money on, you know, a shooting contest, and they're taking, like, 35-foot threes. And Steve Kerr, one of the greatest shooters of all time.
No chance.
Like, he looked like a little kid shooting a half-court shot from 35 feet, which is funny because Dame Lillard and Steph Curry, who Steve Kerr has coached for, you know, the entire prime of his career, shoot three of those a game. And they do it quite easily. And anyway, in that Last Dance scene, which ends with Michael Jordan, of course, winning the money because, you know, it's a Michael Jordan documentary where, you know, pretty much all the positives are laid out for him. I got such a kick out of Steve Kerr. Like, yeah, he could make a three, but don't you dare ask him to go, you know, 6-7 feet behind the line. That's what I imagine Nick Nurse doing.
Sure. His last two seasons, he averaged 5.2 and 5 attempts per game. And over his college career, 61% of his shots were from three-point range. You might owe him a little bit of an impo- 5 per game at that era is a pretty good volume. It's a pretty good volume.
It's fine. It's really just the inability to not shoot it from that far.
I have no access to game tape. Like, I think our game tape goes back to like the, I want to say like 2005 era. So it does not go back to the mid 80s. So I'm not sure how much video there is of Nick Nurse at Northern Iowa and what kind of degree of difficulty we're talking about here, but he did get up a fair amount of them in his heyday. But we're completely off topic because that is not why we are.
I just wanted to make fun of Steve Kerr for a minute.
Sure,
you brought in
sure.
facts and figures sure. and numbers to kind of refute my take. Okay, let's go to Nick Nurse.
So Nick Nurse, new head coach of the Philadelphia 76ers. You know, he was one of the six names that were floated right from the beginning. It was reported, about 24 hours, I think, before the report came out that he accepted the Sixers job. It was reported that he had withdrawn from consideration for the Bucks job. He was also interviewing with the Phoenix Suns, ended up landing in Philadelphia. You know, I think when we did our last podcast, we both had him either two or three on the top of our list. He was certainly in discussion. I think I previously said if this was a year ago, he probably would have been top of my list. And quite frankly, he is deserving of that role. We just veered a little more towards the offensive creativity being where our focus would be. So he's, you know, obviously spent the last, 5 years as the head coach of the Toronto Raptors. He had spent the 5 years before that as an assistant coach with the Toronto Raptors. And before then, he was all over the map, literally all over the map. I think he has coached in at least 5 different countries. He was over in the BBL, over in the United Kingdom for, 11 years, I think. Won 2 championships, 2 BBL championships, I believe. I should probably have all this right up there on the top of my mind. But he was all over the place, spent a long time in the G League. He has experience as a head coach, even if it was only the last 5 years in the NBA. I guess taking a step back, what's your overall thoughts? It's a little, you know, we talked a lot about Nick Nurse in the previous podcast. He was one of the two we really focused on in that podcast. But overall thoughts now that it is official.
Yeah, that was my initial thought. Good thing we led off with him and talked about him maybe like half the time for all 6 candidates.
No, I didn't. You know, I felt a little guilty to Frankie Vogel, but I also didn't really feel like I was going to come back to bite us in the last one.
No, and also, we'll see if it gets made official. It'd be cool if Kevin Young gets that Phoenix job.
Yeah. What is interesting, and Kevin Young, great guy, has worked his way through. He was a G League coach here in Delaware for a little while, a member of Brett Brown's staff for a good chunk after that as well. It is interesting that of the 3 contenders, 2 of them went with guys who have never been a head coach at this level. You know, you got the Suns. Theoretically, if they do make Kevin Young the hire, he would be a coach coaching a contender who has never been a head coach in the NBA before. And then Milwaukee with Griffin. It's interesting. It's certainly something where I think, you know, when we looked at Sam Cassell, we sort of dismissed him, not because Sam's not qualified, but because we didn't think that was the route Daryl Morey was going to go. 2 of his peers went that route. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
And it just goes to show that I don't think that's necessarily the wrong move. Like Daryl Morey said before this started,
Look at the guy they just hired. I think he's one of a handful. Might have been a little more than a handful who won a championship. And most of those are probably way back in the, you know, 60s and 70s. Won a championship with the Raptors in his first year.
Yeah. Like, the reason this guy's experienced and won a championship was he was given a contender in his first year and came through with, you know, by the very sliver of Kawhi Leonard's a million bounce shot.
Don't need to bring that up, Rich. We don't need to bring that up.
But that's part of the gag on this show, that, you know, we bring up the misery just as much as possible. I think it's an interesting hire, right? I think we said heading into it from, you know, an X's and O's tactical standpoint, which again is not all of the game. Daryl Morey even said it. That's not everything here, but it's what we can see for the most part. It's what we actually can digest a little bit. He's one of the 2 most interesting ones. I thought D'Antoni would have been the other one, and D'Antoni would have sent some interesting messages maybe with what the Sixers were doing with the rest of their offseason. So certainly think he is a super sharp guy. Seems like he lost his way a little bit in Toronto at the end of it as the team also got a little bit worse. You know, he had that press conference at the end of the year where he said 10 years has been a long time, and that was kind of a weird time to do that. Eric Kareen in my article at The Athletic was like, that was a ridiculous thing to say. And I got to be honest, if we were covering the Sixers, like if that was the Sixers coach doing that on the road and being like, you know, 10 years is a long time, as they're in the middle of a race right before the game, I think I agree with them. I would feel the same way. And just like, this is ridiculous how unfair this is. That said, 10 years is a shit ton of a long time for one coach to be in the same place.
I heard Doug Collins say 3 years is a long time. Now, he said it after the season, even though he came to that conclusion in the middle of the season. 10 years is a very long time in one place. You just don't admit it while games are still being played. I agree.
So, yeah, you know, like he's a super sharp guy. But as we said last time as well, the way the Raptors played basketball was almost antithetical to the way the Sixers played basketball. They just completely opposite styles, and it will be interesting to see how he kind of bridges that gap. But look, as everybody here knows, I'm not as big on the coach, even though it interests me and fascinates me. You need Joel to actually start playing a little better in the big games. That is, we said that in the final pod of the season. That's going to be my take moving forward. But in terms of bringing in a new voice and, you know, like an interesting guy that, you know, this could go a bunch of different ways, I'm excited. It's an interesting guy.
And look, we can get into his defense. I think, you know, we mentioned last time he's clearly a creative guy on that side of the court. We don't think what he used in Toronto would translate to this team, but we also don't expect him to try to use what he used in Toronto. You know, I do think that can be said a little bit offensively as well. I tend to think a lot of offenses take the DNA of their stars, and it becomes that kind of a system. He got a lot of credit in the final year under Casey for revamping that offense and modernizing it a little bit. You know, and then over the last couple of years, that became a very ISO-heavy, stagnant sort of offense, in part because a lot of those forwards are just not great at dribbling or passing. Like, they've gotten to be very good shot makers, especially from where they started. But I'm not sure there's that much you can do with, you know, OG and CI. Like, I think that identity is, but he didn't necessarily find
the three-point shooting fell off the...
Completely. That being said, it's not like he's inheriting a full roster of elite quick decision makers on this one either. You've got a little more if Harden comes back, obviously. But outside of that, not a whole ton of, you know, plus passers, I would say. Not a ton of creativity, so we'll see what he can do with that. But I think he is certainly, you know, of the candidates, he is as qualified, if not more qualified, than any of them. I'm very interested to see what he does defensively because it's a completely different group of talent that he has to work with, and I'm interested to see what he can do in terms of getting Joe into the spots he needs to be in the playoffs, because that's really what it's, I mean, they can come out and have the second ranked offense in the league, and it's gonna be like, all right, but can you do that against the Boston Celtics with Joe as your focal point? And that will be his pretty much entire, because no matter what he does defensively, when the playoffs come around and Joel Embiid's flying around, they're going to be good. And I think that's one thing we've really learned this year. When God, that first like third of the season, it was just like, this is a train wreck defensively. I've never seen it be a train wreck defensively. I don't know how they're going to get the back on track. Well, the way you get back on track is you make Joel Embiid very motivated, and he just covers up a lot of shit. And Nick Nurse will figure out how to get them to be a good playoff defense. Can he get them to be an effective half-court offense in the playoffs? That's going to be his entire job, and keeping people happy.
And that's why it's a little bit of a weird hire, because that's not his forte. Like, the Raptors' half-court offense over the past couple years was bad. And look, I think it's mostly the player's fault, right? When you're running Pascal Siakam ISOs surrounded by the worst three-point shooting in the freaking league. And
you're limited. You're limited, yeah.
And certainly below average passing. Like, you cannot emphasize that enough. Like, just below average passing pretty much all over. You know, maybe outside of Scotty Barnes or somebody like that. You know, Pascal's pretty good on the move, but again, he's not LeBron diming people up for sure.
Yeah, he might not be a negative passer at this stage of his career, but he's not a plus-plus passer for sure.
And he's also not what I would consider like a quick decision maker too. Like, yeah. You know, yeah, fine, yeah. He can make the pass, but that also has to come from his isolation. And,
yeah.
You know, which
they can make the reads when they force a rotation, but if there's not a rotation, it's just dribble, 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 jab step, dribble, dribble. What are we doing?
Yep. Okay. So let's start with the defense, though, and just kind of dig into that. I'm very curious to see what will happen, because Nick Nurse's big thing is ball pressure and, you know, forcing turnovers and active defense.
You're saying that's James Harden?
James Harden, if James Harden is here, I think this is the worst roster in the league for that style. Am I like? Yeah.
No, you're 100%. And that's why I don't expect him to carry over almost any of that. Like, he has to completely redo what he does. And it's tough because Toronto has been obviously not the same, because they've lost Kawhi, they've lost Kyle Lowry, a lot of players. But who they've targeted and the types of players that they've targeted has been pretty consistent. That's why we thought Scottie Barnes was a really good fit there. You don't know if that was for Nick Nurse's scheme or if Nick Nurse was playing in the scheme for the players that Masai was drafting. He has to just take everything and throw it away, because it's not going to work here. Like, maybe Maxi can pressure a little bit, but he's going to get beat a lot if he does that. And Harden, not at all.
And it didn't work at the end in Toronto, too, which goes to show that I don't want to say positionless basketball is a hoax, but you better have players that can do a variety of things. Like, if you just have a bunch of 6'7" guys, like, it doesn't automatically work.
Yeah. Well, and even there, like, you had Fred VanVleet, and you usually had a pretty traditional center as well, so it wasn't completely positionless.
They didn't over the past, like, until they got
at the end, yeah.
Puddle at the end. I still call him Puddle from Game of Zones, but it was clear that they were just getting destroyed at the rim. Now, part of that was they were rotating like crazy, but they also didn't have a traditional rim protector, and it was clear that Masai made that crazy trade for Puddle where he gave like a very lightly protected pick to San Antonio, which, by the way, whew, San Antonio is...
Yeah.
I know Oklahoma City...
They're looking good.
It might be in 10 years, we might be back to like, you know, the mid-2000s where the Southwest Division is just where all the good teams are. Because everybody's talking about Oklahoma City. San Antonio has Wemby, and they have a lot of picks, too. Like, Wemby's worth three quarters of Oklahoma City's draft haul just right there.
Yep. No, it's draft haul, all of that stuff, young players. It's all about getting that one guy who can be a top five player.
So anyway, I got you off track.
Oh, we can talk about all these young teams. That's right. That feels very processy, some of these teams. That would be fun to talk about. Let's cover the Thunder for a offseason.
Well, yeah, but you know, with this second apron, we better do it quickly because they're not going to be able to afford all those
true.
Guys.
That's
if
true.
They're good at the end of it. You know, the James Harden trade will be actually necessary this time around for Oklahoma City. The bad James Harden trade for them.
Yeah.
Not the Sixers' good James Harden trade. So I don't know what he's going to do because you're right. The roster is just like, look, if Ben Simmons and Matisse Thybulle were still here, I'd be like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Like those guys can fly around and do some of those things. But outside of D'Anthony Melton, I'm not seeing the ball pressure, the ball hawks on this team.
No.
And can you build a good defense around that? Yeah, I think you can. But I guess what I find interesting is that Nick Nurse is known for unconventional schemes, flexibility. Box in one, triangle in two. I think by definition, when you have Joel Embiid, you're a little more vanilla defensively, yep. And that works largely if he's good and he's motivated. So I'll just kind of be interested to see how that happens because it's not the easiest fit in the world, in my opinion. If you're transferring over what he did in Toronto to here, I don't think that's going to happen. Like you see Scottie Barnes and Precious Achiuwa and all these guys rotating out like crazy up on ball screens. You don't want Joel Embiid doing that in the regular season. Uh-uh.
The only other guy who would really fit that kind of a scheme is McDaniels.
Paul.
But he is a free agent who couldn't shoot enough to stay on the court in the playoffs. So
there's one other guy, too. B-Ball Paul would be.
Oh, sure.
Yep. Perfect Toronto Raptor.
Yeah.
Under Nick Nurse. So, you know.
Including B-ball running Paul. Around with his head cut off.
Yes, exactly. So. Sign B-Ball Paul to the max and then bring him back and fit him into the system. But yeah, I mean
look,
I think
we've done the whole max backup center thing. Like, that's old hat, too.
Yeah, and at least this guy won't pout and have the whole city hate him by the end of the... I don't think people would hate B-Ball Paul as much even under Al Horford's contract. By the way, Al Horford, nice conference finals there, by the way.
Look, that was such a fun... I know it probably hurt the hearts of a lot of people listening to this podcast. That was a very entertaining conference finals. I enjoyed that tremendously. From the incredible finishes to the up and down roller coaster nature, the comeback that came up short. Kind of like... I'll admit, like, it might be tough watching Jimmy win, but it's more fun watching the Celtics lose than it is watching Miami lose. So I was 100% okay with them getting their hearts ripped out like that. That was fun. I enjoyed that.
Well, that's good. I'm happy for you. I agree with you. It was an entertaining series. I thought for Miami to come back after the way that Game 6 ended is just...
Yeah.
It's crazy. Like, well, I don't understand how you bounce back.
They shot the shit out of the ball, too, because now they don't have to be chokers. It's funny how a lot of that rides on three-point shooting, like we've said a million times. When they shoot, in a competitive portion of that game, they were shooting like 50% from three. Helps. Fucking helps.
It's just crazy how the narrative can change just based off one game, one little play. I mean, again, they're all-time chokers if they lose that final game. And here I am lauding their toughness, their excellence, their Caleb Martin-ness. And
now Jason Tatum gets to be a choker.
Caleb Martin should have gotten that award over Jimmy, by the way. He absolutely, yeah. He was much more consistent player than him in that series.
Yeah. It's just Jimmy's highs are so high. Like, they're, when Jimmy's dominating game, it's so obvious.
Yeah, but I don't know. He's, I hear his lows, I hear you. His lows are bad. James Harden was not that much different than Jimmy Butler in that series, but.
Well, one of them plays defense, and then that helps.
One of them plays defense, and one of them has a better supporting cast and coach and culture and all that shit, too. So, oh, by the way, Miami, I think I saw a stat in that series, highest percentage of made open threes in the history of the NBA.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Look, I love their toughness. It helps when the ball's going in the basket and the team that couldn't make a three all year has found it from the position.
I mean, look, we might be getting ready for a finals if the Sixers could just shoot 40% from three over the last two games. Really over the last one game, because there wouldn't be a game seven if they could. But
again,
anyway, it's water under the bridge.
It's part of it. And also Eric Spoelstra, like, whew, man, that guy is an amazing basketball coach.
Yeah. Nope. There's two or three that really, really, really elevate a team, and he's one of them, for sure. For sure. And one of the other ones now has Wemby. For how long, We'll see, but that'll be fun to watch.
Okay, back to Nurse. So I think that the other thing with Toronto is, you remember before last season's first round series, when we talked about, oh man, these guys, the way they win is by winning the possession game, right? Mm-hmm. They crash the offensive glass. They force turnovers. They push the ball in transition. It's just everything is completely different from the Sixers team.
And that was very key because, like you mentioned, like their half-court offense was one of the worst in the league, but they still end up with like a mid-pack offense because they just fucking force a lot of turnovers and get out. And this team doesn't force everything has to be different. It's going to be wild.
Now, the Sixers don't do this in the postseason, but the Sixers execute in the half-court in the regular season.
Yep.
And they shoot the shit out of the ball from three in the regular season. So it's just going to be completely different. And I guess it goes to show the guy who's been considered flexible and adaptable, he's going to have to adapt because his personnel, I don't care if Harden is here or not, regardless, if you have Maxey on one end of your positional spectrum and Embiid on the other, this team is wildly different. And frankly, like, not a ton of foot speed in between those two either.
Even their good defenders, PJ, not a ton of foot speed. Tobias, who's one of their better, at least man-to-man defenders, not a ton of foot speed. You know, you could at least see, like, if Harden walks, you can maybe see, like, a bad version of Toronto with Maxey and Melton and Jalen McDaniels brought back and Paul Reed. But, like, I mean, first of all, that lineup's not scoring at all. So I guess it would be a little bit like Toronto. But that's not the outcome you want. Like, you need some of these guys back.
Yeah. I mean, and I think you mentioned it, too. Like, Tobias, when he is a good defender, he is a one-on-one defender.
Not making decisions.
And that's what PJ is too, right? Stay in front of you, hopefully get away with some hand checking and some physical play. But it's certainly not scrambling all over the place on defense.
Yeah.
You know,
no, the more decisions Tobias Harris has to make in a possession, the higher likelihood he's gonna screw up. It's just
And PJ Tucker is the oracle, the player version of Mike D'Antoni's we're gonna switch everything system. Just keep people in front of you one-on-one, handle your business, guard your yard, whatever. He's kind of like, he is the believer in that in that system. So, I don't know. I think it's just going to be very different, and that's what I guess will make this intriguing. I would say one thing. Here's a little prediction. I think Nick Nurse is going to get on Tyrese Maxey to defend really hard. And look, we know Tyrese Maxey's limitations. I don't think he's ever going to be a very good defensive player.
No.
But he does have the potential to, like, maybe pester people in the backcourt a little bit. Mm-hmm. Maybe be one of those guys who, okay, you know, teams used to do this. They still do it to Harden all the time because he doesn't want to bring up the ball. A guy who's, like, guarding him, and Harden brings the ball over at exactly 16 seconds, and it's hard to get the Sixers into their offense. That's one prediction where I think Nick Nurse is, Tyrese, you can do that at least. You can at least pressure them 94 feet. Okay, once we get into the half court, all right, then it might be a little bit tougher, you know. But
yeah. No, and most of my concerns with Tyrese don't really come down to effort. It's a combination of size and decision-making and communication. And I'm not sure if Nurse can necessarily, like, you can't just yell at him to fix those. It's going to take some time, but at least you can accentuate some of his positives, and that might be pressuring the ball. Agree with you there. What do you think? Do you read anything into this at all with regards to the decision or the recruitment of James Harden here in a couple of weeks?
The only thing I read into it is it's not Mike D'Antoni.
Yeah.
So I think by definition, it makes Harden less likely to come back.
Or it means that Daryl has pretty good intel that he will come back. I'm not saying that's the case, but if you feel confident that Harden's coming back and you got his blessing on Nurse, it could theoretically mean you don't have to cater. But when has James Harden never not wanted someone to cater to him? I don't know. I think your read's probably closer to the truth.
I don't know. After Doc Rivers and Harden didn't get along, we're going to get into some of the interpersonal stuff in a little bit. Nick Nurse.
He can be confrontational. I think the way we called about it last time.
He can be passive-aggressive.
Sure, sure. Yeah. And aggressive-aggressive, too. The last time we talked about him, like, hey, or last podcast, we were like, hey, he might be the one to get them out of the comfort zone, but that might only have a shelf life of a year or two. Seems a little. Now, look, you know, if you can get a good version of James for a year or two, might be worth whatever downsides there are on the back end, but it's an interesting choice for sure.
And Nick Nurse, his big thing is we got to play hard.
Yeah, like
that's not the way he coaches. Eric
Harden's forte. Yeah,
wrote about it in his story. Gary Trent said, "Yeah, I got used to hearing him criticize my defense in the media before he would say it face to face to me." I'm like, oh my god, I can't even imagine what the James Harden situation would be like. And you know, hey, look, maybe James Harden appreciates, like, Nick Nurse threw some crazy defenses at Harden. I remember there was a game in Toronto where they basically played behind him. This was like the height of Harden and the height of Raptors being good. And like, they just, I mean, they completely tried to take Harden out of the game. I believe the Rockets won that game. Maybe there's some respect there, but I don't know. I find it hard to believe that James Harden will be better with the guy who's the little bit of passive aggressive, we need you to pressure the ball, which I stink at, coach, over Doc Rivers, who, I don't know, like.
Well, their big problem was that Doc was like, hey, maybe don't go to Vegas during the playoffs. Like, that seems reasonable from Doc's perspective. I don't know. And he did it privately, too. I agree with you. This could be interesting.
In fact, he said publicly when asked about it, there was a story with one of the Boston guys interviewed him after the game. He said, I said, go ahead, or whatever. So I don't know. I think my read is right, but also James Harden has limited options. So, you know, we will see how that goes. I certainly don't think Nick Nurse is like completely disqualifying for James Harden.
No, I agree. I would put it that way. I agree. It's, yeah. Where were we going to pivot to from there?
Well, let's talk about the offense, because that has been bad.
Yeah.
And I guess my question to you is, you know, he coached for the Rio Grande Valley Vipers, right? That's their.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That team was used by Houston in kind of a more aggressive fashion for a lot of years than a lot of G League teams, where they experimented with play style, they obviously experimented with players like Robert Covington. I remember doing a story on Cov, and Brett Brown told me, yeah, he played for Houston's G League team.
When he
came here, all he used to do was jack threes, and that's all he would do. And we actually had to teach him how to play defense here. And I think largely that was successful. But that's why, you know, when Cov first showed up, I guess it was like 2014, he showed up in Philly. Like, he was shooting all of those long threes, and that was pretty easy for him because that's all he was doing in the G League. I kind of wonder with the offense if the partnership with Morey is kind of more instructive than maybe we think. Like, they ran some really ugly offense in Toronto, but this is somebody who grew up in the kind of pace and space, you know, shoot a bunch of threes. And I don't know, like, again, as much as the defense is not transferable with this personnel, the offense is easier to run with these guys. It really is. Like, it doesn't take a rocket scientist, get the ball to Joel Embiid, you know, at the free throw line and in pick and roll and those things. So, I guess I'm kind of curious if this becomes a little bit more of a Maury Ball team, if they, if Nick Nurse is kind of more willing to, you know, space the floor and take more threes. But that's kind of my only thought there.
Yeah. No, like I said, his final year as an assistant before becoming a head coach, he was given a lot of credit for modernizing Toronto's offense. They ended up with the second-ranked offense in the league that year. They went from 22nd in three-point attempt rate to 5th. So I think he definitely agrees, theoretically, with Maury Ball, at least at some level. Like you said, the 3 years he spent with Rio Grande Valley is, I think, a big part of this, or at least a big part of the comfort zone between those two. I think part of what happened there in Toronto is just that's the identity of those players. We just haven't really seen that kind of creativity to get Joe to his spots. I do think you're going to, I mean, you're right, especially in a regular season, this offense is probably going to be easy to run. Like, they should end up with a top five offense if Harden returns and if Embiid is healthy. Yeah, I think you could definitely see an increase in, but like, I don't think you're going to see a drastic increase in like 3-point attempt rate, in part because I don't think Joel Embiid's going to be like, all right, I'm going to move off of that elbow and go back to the 3-point line and launch threes. Like, you're always going to be a mid-pack 3-point attempt rate team. But I think, you know, I don't want to say Doc didn't care about that, but I don't think Doc was obsessed with that. I think you could see an uptick in attempts. Not drastic, but an uptick.
Yeah. So that's kind of my only thought there. And it just goes to show this coaching thing. There are gray areas, and you know, your personnel often dictates who you are, because Nick Nurse heading into Toronto was considered an offensive guy.
Yep.
Like, he was, you know, the offensive coordinator, like you said, under Dwayne Casey. He, you know, was lauded for his ideas and kind of his creativity on that end. Rio Grande Valley certainly helps there. That is not his MO anymore. Like, we are praising him for his creative defense and all of those things, and not as much on the offensive end.
It'll be fun to see him in a different environment, in a different challenge.
Totally. So let me ask you.
It is kind of amazing, though, because like, he's coached like 14 different teams or whatever, and really the only one we can draw something meaningful from is that spot in Toronto. And because they've been so similar in how they've been constructed, like I said, it'll be interesting.
Yeah, I wasn't following the London British Basketball League team.
No big thoughts on the Birmingham Bullets.
Oh, is that
he did coach okay. London Towers. He's coached a bunch of teams over there in England.
The London Towers.
Manchester Giants. Big fan.
Towers beat. So,
looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominant Dominic Toretto I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
So two reasons it seemed like he kind of wore out his welcome in Toronto. First one is that, and this ties into the big thing a lot of people have talked about. He obviously played his starters a shit ton of minutes. And the other side of that coin is that the younger players at the end of the bench, not a whole lot of player development going on there in Toronto over the past couple of years. And I guess what it seemed like Masai Ujiri was not happy with the development of those players. He's mentioned that. There was certainly some disagreement there. What do you make of that, and kind of how does it apply to this situation here?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think for a long time, Toronto was one of those organizations where you look to and you said, it seems like everyone they draft just gets better. And certainly recently, the playing time hasn't been there. I think in part because Nick probably felt like going from a championship level to sub-championship level, he almost had to overachieve. So he might have felt the pressure and leaned on veterans more than maybe he should have. You know, I'm not going to say like they can't develop players, but when you look at young players here, I mean, who are we really talking about? Like B-Ball Paul, if he's brought back. Jalen McDaniels, if he's brought back. But B-Ball Paul, it's not like, I know there are a lot of people that want B-Ball Paul playing alongside Embiid. I don't. I want passing and decision-making on that floor around Joel Embiid. That's not B-Ball Paul. You don't really need Nick Nurse to give an uptick in B-Ball Paul's minutes. You just need to make him, or you need for him to make the right decision on the backup center. That's my only real request with B-Ball Paul and Nick Nurse. So that's really, you know, what we're talking about there.
You're missing the other name that people really want to see. Jaden Springer. Just saying.
Sure. Okay.
That's what the streets are calling for, more Jaden Springer minutes.
I'm sure. Look, Jaden Springer looked fine in a limited amount. I saw him with the Blue Coats. He looks like he has improved his skill level. I will almost always be skeptical on players like that until I actually see it in NBA action. I do believe in his defense. You can go back to when he was drafted. I believed in his perimeter defense. He needs to be playable on offense. That's fair. Like, it would be great if they could, you know, have one of these wins here so they could have some cheaper, more cost-controlled players, especially with Springer on a rookie deal. He'll be a restricted free agent. Get him on a cheap number. Yeah, sure. Fair point. I don't have my expectations high, but it would be great if you can get a surprising win. That's fair. He'd fit Nick Nurse's scheme fine if he's legitimate.
This is off topic, but I was just imagining George, who I love, if he gets re-signed.
Oh my God.
And him running around.
Scrambling around? It'd be a disaster.
Yeah, again. So not the greatest personnel right now for Nick Nurse, but we'll see what the roster looks like next month. Yeah, I think, and if you look at Toronto, I think the way it was described is that both the front office and coaching staff have, you know, a little bit of blame there. I mean, some of it is that Nick Nurse is emotional and competitive and all those things, and he probably chased too many regular season wins.
Yeah. And by the way, outside of, you know, they had that one, like, weird year, but outside of that, you generally looked at them and you went, oh, man, they always overachieve. Like, I always say, this is the year they take a big step back, and they very rarely do it. Yeah, you know, that comes at a cost.
Two of the last 3 years were rough. Now, the 1 year, I would say the Tampa year, yeah, toss that one out. That one, they were in very weird circumstances. They had a bunch of injuries, bunch of COVID issues, stuff like that. Okay, toss that one out. They ended up tanking at the end. Yeah. This year was bad. They were an underwhelming team. But part of the reason they were underwhelming is because they overachieved a little bit last year, and they probably set their expectations a little bit too high. Scotty Barnes takes a step back relatively too.
And they overachieved in 2020, I thought, pretty handily after losing Kawhi.
Well, that is, I mean, they did not just overachieve there. That was, they should have thrown a parade for that team. That team, that's as admirable of a second round exit as you can ever get. That team
that
was dominant.
That is one of the least talented 53 win teams I've ever seen.
Dude, they were 53-19.
I know.
I mean, just an amazing coaching job by Nurse in that season. That is a high 50s win team, and that might be the least talented one of all time. I mean, maybe some of those Cleveland LeBron teams when you consider how bad the supporting cast was after LeBron, but you have peak LeBron there. It's it was really poor. So, again, part of it is that he chased a bunch of regular season wins, but like, let's be real. Part of it is that Masai Ujiri did a bad job drafting over the past couple of years. Like, he didn't have like these ready-made amazing players, and you know, I think a lot of people in Toronto seem to understand that. Like, they're like, well, you know, these players aren't exactly like ready to get the Raptors to win a title. You know, I wonder if Sixers Twitter and Jaden Springer was on that roster, you know, would Jeff Doughton and some of these other guys be you know, the cause célèbre for these people. But Nick Nurse clearly did not think they were ready for prime time, and he did not give them much of an opportunity at all. So that's, you know, part of being adaptable and part of being flexible and trying things is trying players up and down your roster.
Yeah.
So I think in some ways that reputation, you know, at least in that regard, it's probably a little bit different than what his rep is. And that's okay. Yeah. But I think for the most part, the Sixers are a good fit because they're a win now team with older players, and you know, the player that you have to develop the most probably is Tyrese Maxey, who doesn't matter. Like, he's going to play.
He's playing anyway. Yeah. No, I do think sometimes fans get a little too, like, they think that in order to develop, you have to be on the court 20 minutes per night. And I think B-Ball Paul is a pretty good example where he got a lot better in the G League. Where I get on, eventually you need to try them out on an NBA court. You need to be able to evaluate them. And you can't play DeAndre... can't play DeAndre Jordan. You know, I think Jaden Springer, it's possible for him to get better in a G League. Eventually, you just need to bring him up and give him a run. And will Nick Nurse do that? We will see. It is tough sometimes to know whether or not the lack of playing is because Nick Nurse just hates young people and the expectations are too high, or because maybe the young players just weren't good enough. It's hard to know without seeing the practices and the G League games and all of that stuff. But not the greatest track record in Toronto at the end, for sure. That's fair.
It should be noted, too, that as much as he played his top players and those starters, I think it was Siakam and Van Vliet, top five in minutes per game, which is not great. One thing to point out is that Nick Nurse was also the coach in 2018-19. And, yeah, sure, we know how that ended. But during that season, he coached Kawhi Leonard, who missed
load management. Yep.
A lot of games, you know, every third game is pretty much out. So he clearly can take the initiative and not overtax his star player.
Although I think some of that is Kawhi taking the initiative. I think Kawhi was a very, very strong hand in a lot of those decisions.
Sure.
Yeah.
But there's a happy medium between
sure.
Siakam and Van Vliet last year and Kawhi. Like, Joel can fit into a nice happy medium in between those two.
The question is, what does Joel want to do, though? Does he want to be the guy playing every night, or does he want to get back to focusing a little bit more on load management? And how much would that help? And honestly, I'm not even sure the answer to that, because he does seem like he stays in better shape when he's playing every night. A lot of these injuries aren't wear and tear injuries or freak at the end.
I have no idea how to handle that. I mean, I think it'll be very interesting to see those two on the same side now.
Yeah, and that's one thing I wanted to bring up. Like, I think I see a lot of people like, oh man, Nick Nurse complaining about Embiid's fouls. Is there any friction there? Joe doesn't fucking care. He cares because he's on the other team complaining about it. Like, if he's pushing for Joel Embiid's fouls, like, he'll get over that in a second.
I think the perfect example of that is Dan Burke, right? Dan Burke actually said, I hate Joel Embiid. Yeah, I hate that team. He's a whiner. And those two are very good friends.
Joel Embiid really well likes it when people complain about him drawing fouls. He's fine. He's fine. He'll get, I mean, Andre Drummond played for the team and they were fine. Joel, he'll be fine. It'll be fine.
But he has also voiced, he was like, man, this guy, all they do is double and triple team me. It's like, all they care about is me not scoring points. Like, the point isn't even to win the game. So I think it'll be very funny to see them on the same side. I definitely think there is a level of respect. Even before he said, respectfully stop bitching about calls,
Yeah. He
said, I really respect him as a coach. He's done a lot. And I think that is genuine, because Joel is a basketball junkie who watches every team around the league and, you know, how teams guard the other best star players. So that'll be an interesting one. I guess that leads into the last point, is that, you know, we already touched on this a little bit, is that Nurse is locker room, player, man management left a little bit to be desired over the past couple years.
Yeah.
I think some of those press conferences will go over better in Philly when he's like, this player sucked, our efforts sucked, those type of things. It'll be quite a difference from Doc, who would be like, there'd be like a fire, and he'd be like, there's no fire. What are you talking about? We're fine, like, or whatever. It's a very obvious thing. That said, how does that go over in the locker room? How does he motivate his players? Like, is his direct communication, as I think Eric pointed out, like, that wasn't great at the end of his career. How much of that is just, you know, 10 years in one place, a lot of the same players, maybe the relationship had run its course and it'll get better with a fresh start. And how much of it is, he's a little bit of a, you know, a hard charging guy, and there might be a shelf life on those things.
Which shelf life's fine. If you're telling me he's only got 3 to 5 years in Philly, that's fine, because that's a window you need to win a championship in. It's, will you get buy-in during those 3 to 5 years? He needs to at least have buy-in at the beginning half of his tenure, beginning part of his tenure, if you're going to be that tough on players. It'll be very. I'm fascinated to watch Harden fit if he does come back. All right. I guess any quick thoughts on the finals coming up here?
I'm excited to watch.
Do you think Sixers fans are rooting for generally? Not us, because I'm just rooting for entertaining basketball. But like, which one do you think will hurt them less?
It's a good question. I mean,
I feel like probably. Jimmy at this point has earned like begrudging respect, and the damage of him leaving is damage no matter what. So I feel like if he leads the Heat to a title, which I don't expect, them picking the Nuggets pretty heavily, but I think if that happened, I think it would probably be less of a, you know, less damaging to the Philadelphia fan base than Jokic winning.
I think if I was still a fan, I would want Jokic to win, just because
I enjoy watching that.
It's kind of a pretend rivalry. Well, I certainly enjoy watching them, but it's also kind of a pretend rivalry. It's like, oh, okay, like who wins the MVP at the end of the year? They play one time every year because Joel misses one of the games. Yeah. Like, it's not that important. And by the way, the idea was, you know, I guess the reason you don't want Jokic to win is, oh man, he'll get so far ahead of Joel in this rivalry. Guess what? He's already really far ahead of him. Yeah. And the only way Joe can get back into that conversation is to do what he's doing now, which is independent of these finals. So to me, I actually think if I was a fan, I would want the Nuggets to win. But I also have not been for a few years, and I certainly have not gotten into the Jokic Embiid back and forth like a lot of people have, just because I don't really care.
Yeah.
it's going to be fun. I hope the ratings talk doesn't overshadow it, because they could have had Celtics Lakers, and I bet you that would have done, considering how well the ratings have bounced back this year, which I always like to see. I don't care about them as much, but it does go to show that the league is relatively healthy. I just hope it's not used against the NBA too much, considering these are smaller markets, and this is kind of the hardcore basketball fans' finals.
It feels a little bit like a San Antonio Spurs run, and I got sick of the argument back then too. I wonder how much, like, do you think people would have thought the Spurs were a fun team to watch if they played in a bigger market? Because I thought the Spurs were really fun to watch. Maybe not a lot of personality or outward emotion, but like the style of play I always found enjoying. I wonder how much of that was just they're playing in San Antonio.
I think certainly towards the back end of their run. Like, I think the team that I'm thinking of, the 2013 and 2014, the team that won the championship, but also the one that lost on the Ray Allen shot. Like, they played the beautiful game more than I've ever seen a team play the beautiful game. Now, if we go back to like the 03 Tim Duncan post up. Now, in fairness, that era of NBA basketball was,
yeah, that was considered beautiful basketball back then.
So I can't really, I certainly didn't like watching that. I remember the Pistons finals. That was a good close series, but I kind of hated those Pistons. I like that they didn't have a star, but they played good defense.
No, they played ugly basketball. And not only was their own offense ugly, but they made the other offense ugly. It was, I didn't enjoy watching.
Look, and
I liked watching, but that was it.
Rip I liked watching, and you know, that was a guy who shot mid-range jumpers and ran off screens. Like now it would be Rip Hamilton running off screens from three. I mean, he would still be a really good player now. Anyway, I think for the first part of it, it's pretty ugly era of NBA basketball. I certainly think 2013-14. The 2013 Heat-Spurs finals, that was an all-timer. That's one of my favorite ones of all time. That's just, and now look, I think the game was played a little bit differently. Like, teams were still, the Heat were like blitzing screens, which kind of led to this crazy pinging ball movement, which doesn't really exist as much anymore.
No.
Kind of wish they would change the rules a little bit to
start
to
playing
bring
that worse
back.
Defense so that the offense can be more entertaining.
Well, at some point, I think it was pretty shortly after that, Frankie Vogts realized, oh, wait, if we just stick this giant dude in front of the rim, it's hard for them to score and we don't have to work as hard. Oh, yeah, let's do that. But anyway, I think in terms of this finals, like the way Jokic plays, hopefully Jimmy has a couple of really good performances because he was really losing his legs at the end of that series. Yeah. Hopefully he, drinks some of that big face coffee and gets into the cryo chamber and, figure some things out.
Well, we have that.
I think the Nuggets
up.
Are going to win too, by the way.
I agree. And that starts tomorrow?
Yes, Thursday. Yep.
All right. Well, I think that is a good place to cut it off. Thank you, Rich, for jumping on, and we will talk to you soon.
See you, man.